It is that time on a Monday. What is going on, Nashville, Middle Tennessee, wherever it is that you stream 104.5 The Zone? We appreciate you guys hanging out here with us from 10 to 1 each and every weekday. Big Money Lucas Panzeca is here. I am here. We are excited to have you here for the next 3 hours, and we have a bunch of stuff to discuss. The Nashville Predators, Lucas Panzeca, very excited. He attended the game last night. We will have a Panzeca Preds update at some point in the first hour. Obviously, the news of the day is Eddie George reportedly in as the head coach of your TSU Tigers. But it's good news for everybody except Rod Reed. We'll hear from Rod Reed here in just a second. Tough scene to see him have to go into a press conference last night with all of the news swirling around him that his replacement, who is, you know, I mean, it may have been, I'm sure there's a great many names that you could have put in there and said, okay, like, you understand. You understand what TSU is doing. You understand what is going on. But for the sake of Rod Reed, it just snowballed. He got buried by it, and it's unfortunate. But we'll discuss that at length over the course of today. Howard Gentry Jr., one of the university's most notable alumni and staple of the Nashville community, will join us over the course of today's show. We will discuss it at length. NHL trade deadline, 2 p.m. today. Johnny Glennon is going to be here. We'll keep an eye on that if the Preds make any moves. Vols had an open practice. Trey Wallace was there. He'll join us coming up next to talk all things Tennessee football and some Vols baseball. The Vols have a winner on Rocky Top. And not just that, it's a cocky, confident winner on Rocky Top. Somebody that's in every other SEC team's heads, which gives you great delight if you've been paying attention to any of what's going on with the Vols baseball team. So we'll talk about that. Jadeveon Clowney is on the move. Reportedly, it's going to be Cleveland, but the Colts are keeping an eye on it. The team that is not being discussed, though, for the services of Jadeveon Clowney is the Tennessee Titans. Mock Draft Monday, Ben Standing of The Athletic. But we start in the obvious place. We got to start with Eddie George. We got to start with what's going on with Eddie George, with TSU, and this report from, now I want to give proper credit because Brett McMurphy of Stadium is the one who got the credit for breaking the story. But, and this is not to draw attention to myself, by the way, if you want to jump in on the conversation, 615-737-1045 is the number that you dial. But I got a DM on, let me check my DMs. I got a DM on Friday about this situation. There was something circulating on Facebook, whether it was in Titans groups on Facebook, whether it was in TSU groups on Facebook, I'm unclear. But somebody named Tim Thompson on Friday, this was a DM that was sent to me, said, you heard it here first from Adidas Next Level Tim Thompson. I'm not sure what Adidas Next Level is, but Tim Thompson is the person. One of my college connects just hit me up and told me Eddie George will be the new head coach at Tennessee State University, Tiger Big Blue, and bringing with him, now this is the stuff that has not yet been verified by multiple reports, as was verified by Brett McMurphy yesterday, but bringing with him Tennessee Titan former head coach Jeff Fisher and Jeff Fisher's son, Brandon, will be the defensive coordinator. Now, the Brandon Fisher portion of that has been reported by several people. But Brett McMurphy got the credit for this, and I got this DM on, so, okay, Saturday at 10:50 a.m. Basically, somebody asking me, Kevo, who sent this to me, asking me, this is trending amongst our TSU alumni. You think it holds any weight at all? And my first response is, yeah, probably not.
I got sent the same thing. I said, sounds like a bunch of message board crap.
I said, you know, and I'll read exactly what I said. I said, I'll ask around, but I know how much both Jeff and Eddie are involved in right now. There's almost a 0% chance. Well, dummy, should have done your homework. And honestly, I did ask around a little bit, but I can't say that I'm terribly tied in to TSU athletics. So I didn't see anybody who hadn't seen anything but the same stuff that was circulating around the internet. And then McMurphy has the report yesterday that kind of lights everybody on fire. So I have several questions about this. And if you want to jump in on the conversation, 615-737-1045 at Buck Rising, at Lucas Panzeca, at 1045 The Zone is where you contact the show on Twitter. And if you send us a DM, we'll make sure to verify it this time. But I've got several questions about this, because for the reason why I was a little bit dismissive of it on Saturday morning are the same reasons that I'm curious about it now. Eddie George is involved in a million different things, whether it's his acting career, whether it's his charitable work, whether it's, you know, being a board member at Fisk University, where he's heavily involved in the local community. Not just those things, but these are several of Eddie George's regular commitments. And so now it's a curious time, in the same way that it was a curious time for Deion Sanders to leave his gig with the NFL Network. I know he was doing some work for Barstool, but then to jump in with the Jackson State job. Now, what both of these situations have in common, other than the fact that they're going to play each other in the Southern Heritage Classic in Memphis, and you bet your butt that I'm going to be there. I've never been to Memphis before. Lucas, this is a good time. I don't know if you're good. I don't know. Every time I get sent on a field trip, you get left at home. I'm sorry. But I would very much like to go to Memphis, whether it's with or without you, buddy. I'm sorry. I hate to tell you, but I want to be a part of this. But the Southern Heritage Classic, I am told, is lit. But what these two situations have in common is they're obviously both historically black colleges. Both programs have a history. Both programs have put out professional football talent previously. But both programs have been subjected to what all small schools are subjected to, which is a lack of funds, a lack of marketing availability, and their budget, their recruiting, everything suffers. The product suffers. Rod Reed was speaking about this last night. Rod Reed, who is currently, as we sit here at 10:09 a.m., still the official head coach of the Tennessee State University Tigers. Chris Harris of WSMV asked Rod Reed about what he has accomplished and the stuff that he has been going through, understanding that Rod Reed went into this press conference yesterday because TSU played a game. TSU played a game, lost the game, came into the situation last night where Rod Reed is having to field answers from a lot more media than Rod Reed's used to because of the Eddie George report. And this is what Rod Reed said, is he wouldn't speak on his status, the status of his job, or about Eddie George, but he did answer Chris's question about the things that he's had to overcome and the things that they've put into place during his staff's time at TSU.
There's been ups and downs. I think that, you know, those years, I think we did a great job of building the program. It was just hard to sustain it. You know, we ran into some financial deals, after the 2013, probably in 2014, 2015, you know, there were some budget cuts. You know, we haven't had our kids in summer school for the last 5 years. You know, we haven't really had a recruiting budget in the last 4 or 5 years. We've played with 7 less scholarships. We hadn't had our full 63 scholarships. This was the first year that we had 63. You know, when Dr. Allen got here and he saw that we did not have 63, we were able to provide 63 scholarships this year, you know, with the guys that we got coming in. So we've been playing, you know, with a one-handed, so to speak, a little bit. But again, our job is to get them ready to play regardless of the circumstances. My dad always told me, and Coach Gillum always told me, hey, you got to play the hand that's dealt you. And that's the hand that's been dealt us. It was a tough hand. And a lot of the fans and people don't know, you know, what we were dealing with lack of recruiting budget, not having summer school, which is so very important in this day and age. But, you know, all they expect you to do is go out there and win. And that's the bottom line. And, you know, for the last 3 years, we hadn't gotten that done. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we can get this thing back going in the right direction. And, you know, Big Blue will be back on top again.
So that's Rod Reed, who is still currently, at the time of this radio show, officially the head coach of the Tennessee State University Tigers. TSU reportedly set to hire Eddie George, naming Eddie George as its new head football coach, according to multiple reports. So what Deion Sanders first and what now Eddie George reportedly, allegedly, and we will speak in hypotheticals when Howard Gentry Jr. joins us, because the university has not yet made it official. We are operating in this kind of purgatory until the news is made official. But what I, from my standpoint, from two guys who have zero head coaching or coaching, you know, I don't know what Deion or Eddie has done for their children as far as like Little League or flag football or peewee or whatever. I don't know what level of coaching experience they have when it relates to like things that they've done for their children. But at the major college level, and I understand that FCS is not major college level, but at the collegiate level, neither of these two individuals had coaching experience. And now they find themselves, one is the head coach, 4-3, Deion, in his first year at Jackson State. Eddie George coming into a situation where he will have zero coaching experience, but will now be tasked with being a leader of men. Now, you can be the face of a program, be a figurehead, and as long as you've got good coordinators around you, a solid coaching staff, which apparently, you know, he's going to bring in Jeff Fisher's son, Brandon, as the defensive coordinator. There's been discussions with Hugh Jackson, reportedly, former Browns and at one point Raiders coach, to be the offensive coordinator. So you can do things to improve the situation around you. But more than anything, it's about attracting eyeballs. It's about attracting dollar signs. I have never attended a TSU press conference or a TSU football game. The most interaction that I've, and this is a failing on my part, right? But this is something that TSU is forcing people to do. If Eddie George is there, I'm going to be at TSU press conferences. I'm going to attend TSU games. We are leading the show. I led the A to Z Sports primetime show with it last night. I'm leading the radio show with it today. It's going to be the biggest. It is the biggest story locally, and it's being discussed nationally because of who Eddie is. It's going to have massive implications for the program for two universities in Jackson State and Tennessee State that they have never been capable of as standalone entities.
I mean, what other context would national reporters like Brett McMurphy be reporting the new head football coach at Tennessee State?
None. This is probably the first, I haven't seen every Brent McMurphy tweet in the history of Brent McMurphy, but I'm almost certain, I would be willing to bet that this is the first time he's mentioned Tennessee State in any of his reporting.
And this is the guy that broke the Zach Smith Ohio State debacle.
Yes.
Breaking the Tennessee State news.
The reason this has as much credibility as it does is because of the people who are reporting it. And it's no slight on the TSU message boards or the TSU Facebook groups or the people sending us DMs. Like, again, it's, but we discredited it or kind of brushed it off because of where it was coming from. And then all of a sudden it has real legs. So we'll spend a lot of time talking about this, not just today, but over the course of the week. Once it's made official, of course, we will circle back around to that conversation, and Howard Gentry Jr. will join us, one of the most notable alumni from TSU, very, very tied in, and we will speak in hypotheticals with Howard because, of course, nothing has been made official by the university yet. But coming up next, we're going to talk Vols because Trey Wallace of Rocky Top Insider was at the open practice for Vol football over the weekend, and there's a lot of different stuff that Trey has taken note of. All that and more coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. So there's a lot going on here on a Monday. A lot of moving parts. A lot of interesting subject matter for us to discuss. This is a very mellow vibe for a Monday. All the vibes here on 104.5 The Zone. According to Ryan Johansson, many, many vibes. They're vibing right now as a team.
Yeah, that was great.
I got a kick out of that. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to our man, Trey Wallace, who was vibing at Neyland Stadium on Saturday. The Tennessee Volunteers had an open practice. And there was much to discuss, much to report on, much to break down. Trey, my brother, how are you?
What's up, my man? Hope you're doing well on this Monday.
I'm doing just fine. I'm curious how long, Trey, we'll start in the obvious place. How long do you think it takes Eddie George as the presumptive future head coach of the Tennessee State University Tigers to start stealing recruits from Josh Heupel? How far away do you think we are from that?
I think if they make that announcement, get it done with and over with, maybe steal a couple for the season even start.
I mean, it's just, that's honestly the first thing that I thought. I was like, what is this going to do to Tennessee? I mean, they're running it on First Take right now, Eddie George. Sports Center talked about it. Everything that you look at or that you read or that you turn to on the national stage is about Eddie George at TSU. And this is something that the Tennessee Volunteers are used to, this kind of coverage, but normally not in a favorable light. So we will see how that, plays out.
It was all interesting. You know, they wanted to make one of those Deion Sanders type hires. I mean, and that's kind of the thing. There was a Tennessee assistant coach who was a former Tennessee assistant coach who was being talked about maybe taking over that program this summer, and they decided to go with the huge splash route. So I don't know, good for TSU, I guess. Hope he gets a staff, but that'll be interesting. They got to pump in a lot of money. I mean, I've been around that area for a long time. They got to pump in a lot of money if they're going to actually do anything over there.
Yeah, that's what Rod Reed, unfortunately for him, was saying in his press conference last night, because this man had to go out, coach a football game, then field questions from the media, a lot more media than Rod Reed is accustomed to seeing. All right, so Tennessee's open practice. You wrote some highlights and observations for Rocky Top Insider. Of course, you can follow Trey at TreyWallace_ on the socials. Let's start with the most important position. What did you observe from the quarterbacks? How much time did Josh Heupel give each of the quarterbacks? What were your observations from the most important position in sports?
I mean, it was split up. I mean, as much as they can. They were running the, you know, routes on air and whatnot. They were running up against the secondary on the back end of practice. They did get into situational football. 7-on-7. They did a little bit of 11-on-11, not much. And I thought, look, I thought Hendon Hooker looked pretty good coming out of the pocket. He's the type of guy that can get outside and make that throw on the run. But so is, you know, Brian Maurer. Brian Maurer is the type of guy. He had a beautiful pass, rolling out right around the 7-yard line, hit Ramel Keaton, tiptoe back in the end zone. And, you know, I thought he throws the ball well, but he's so hot and cold. He's off and on, and that's what it is with Brian Maurer. Harrison Bailey, you know, Harrison Bailey underthrew a couple balls. I'm not a quarterback coach, but it didn't look like at times he felt as comfortable in the pocket throwing the football. His receivers didn't help him out either with a couple drop passes. But right now, as we sit here, and I'm not going to make projections 7 practices in, but I think Hendon Hooker is the type of guy right now that looks the part. Brian Maurer, yes, he can get out there. But my biggest thing about Brian Maurer is, and this is not a knock on the kid, this is just reality, can the kid take a hit and actually stay in a football game? And I think that's one of the big things that, and he has been hurt over the years. And a lot of people do forget that Josh Heupel and the staff recruited Brian Maurer to UCF. So they have a familiarity there. But I think right now when we sit here, they've got, 7 more practices, then they'll have a spring game. I would imagine the coaching staff, when they come out of this thing, they want to narrow this thing down to 2. They don't want to go into summer and then fall camp still having to work with 3 quarterbacks. Do they go into the portal, try to dip in and grab somebody? I don't know. We'll see how comfortable Josh Heupel is with what he has on the roster. But as of right now, I would have to say, you know, it'd be Hooker and then Maurer and then maybe Bailey, as far-fetched as that might sound.
I don't think it's very far-fetched. I think that people have been thinking this of Hendon Hooker, given the fact that Heupel recruited him, given the fact that there are a lot of reasons why he fits within this scheme that we believe Josh Heupel is going to run based on his previous stops at Oklahoma and then, of course, at UCF, where he was most recently. But it's a question, I guess, as to what exactly is Tennessee trying to accomplish on offense? What exactly, how much of the quarterback play is going to rely on pure athleticism? How much does accuracy down the field going to have to factor in? How much are they going to have to manufacture for these players at this position rather than relying on, you know, what would be regarded — this is not normally the case, of course, in college football — but traditional quarterback play? How much are they trying to do with that specific position?
Well, the biggest thing too is, Buck, is like, okay, when you really look at these quarterbacks, like Hooker and Maurer, and then you throw Bailey in there, there's 2 out of 3 that I can see actually running this off, and just looking at it with my eye, just getting out to the line of scrimmage within 6 seconds, getting a play off, and then if that play falls apart, you're able to get outside the pocket and get down the field. To me, they're the 2 quarterbacks. It's Hooker and Maurer.
Yeah.
Bailey, to me, is just not that type of quarterback. And that's not a knock. If that's what they want to run, like Josh Heupel said, look, we will run this offense around the quarterback that we feel is right. And if that means that, you know, they can do that with Bailey, and Bailey can get up in the line of scrimmage and and get a play done in 6 seconds. And if that play falls apart, get to the outside and be able to scramble for a first down or make people miss. I mean, just look at the quarterbacks that Josh Heupel's been dealt with at UCF. You know, you got Milton, you got Gabriel. You know, you look at these type of quarterbacks, and they're able to get first downs with their feet. I just don't see that with Bailey, but maybe they try to flip the offense around where, you know, it suits him. We'll see.
Trey Wallace is here with us of Rocky Top Insider. You can follow him on social media at Trey Wallace _. Talking Vols, talking about the open practice that was held on Saturday. Something that I think is underrated, or at least an underrated storyline, maybe an underrated position group. I think there's a lot of unknowns, specifically with the running backs. Now, we know the situation with Eric Gray having entered the transfer portal and leaving for Oklahoma, and this leaves a very, very big gap in the production that they will have coming out of the backfield, or at least we think. Now, what did you see from D. Beckwith, Jalen Wright, and T. Hodge on Saturday? Who do you believe is in the best position to kind of fill that void, even if they're not doing the same kind of things? Again, like the quarterback, you're going through a scheme change. Who do you think best fits what Heupel wants to accomplish, and who do you think is the leader in the clubhouse right now?
Well, first off, I think Jabari Small and Tyon Evans are the type of running backs that Tennessee will need. You know, pop it to the outside. Be able to get 6-7 yards of down, something along those lines when it comes to, and Tyon Evans to the JUCO transfer, we haven't seen a lot out of him. He's been dealing with an injury. He was kind of suited up, but really wasn't doing much on Saturday. You know, getting to the monster of the group, and we just have to. D. Beckwith, the kid is a physical specimen. 6'4", 215, 220. You know, hard to breathe. I watched one play, actually two plays. They ran back-to-back with D, where it took 2 to 3 defenders to bring him down. I think he is the type of running back that can get downhill, but also they can flank him out into the slant, you know, into the slot position if they want to. There's a bunch of different things you could do with D. Beckwith besides keeping him in the backfield. Because you look at the offense, and Josh Heupel runs, usually they run an offset with a running back, or you know, you're lining two of them out. Okay, which one's going to flank out to the slot? I think D. Beckwith is kind of that guy that, look, Tennessee coaching staff knows they have something special with him, so they've got to use him. And he looked good. I mean, he as good as he can, still learning the position, taking handoffs, putting his head down, and running downfield. I think that T. Hodge is going to be able to help with this offense. I think his running ability, he's a bruiser, can get up the middle. And then don't forget Jalen Wright, who was brought in. I think that he showed flashes of speed. He broke off, I think it was a 28-yard run against the defense, which is not hard to do right now, but he did break off a 28-yard run down the field. And he looks special when it comes to movement and the way, to me, he just glides down the field. And I think that's something that Tennessee is going to have to take advantage of. So, you know, when you look at it, they lost Gray, they lost Chandler, but I'll be honest, Buck, I don't think they lost. Look, Eric Gray's a loss, okay? He was a good running back. But I think with the guys that they have in the running back room right now, I think they're going to be able to make up for that loss. I just think, you know, everybody was freaking out about Tennessee running backs after, you know, Chandler Gray left. But honestly, right now, as we sit here 7 practices into spring, I like where Tennessee's at that spot.
Well, this is why you're as better at your job than I am at mine, because you've made the transition for me with that not so subtle shot at Tennessee's defense that you just made. But by multiple reports, the Tennessee defense certainly seemed to struggle in Saturday's practice. What stood out to you, and what does this foreshadow for a season ahead that we might come to regularly expect from this particular unit?
I mean, brother, where do we start? I mean, I'll leave the secondary out of it, because okay, I think the secondary actually is going to be pretty decent this year for Tennessee if they can build up a 2D, which I think they can. Tennessee's problem is going to lie in the defensive line and the linebacker group. I think right now when you look at the defensive line, you know, what comes to your head? Okay, Darrell Middleton, Aubrey Solomon, Omari Thomas, who was not out there on Saturday. You've got Greg Emerson. Latrell Bumpus is still dealing with a leg injury coming off last year. You've got Matthew Butler. You've got a you you know, Elijah Simmons, I guess, who really wasn't out there on Saturday. You've got some guys that can, you know, fill up some holes, but you don't have that monster. I talked about it last season. Tennessee does not have a monster on the defensive line. And I know what they're, you know, I know they're trying to put, you know, Tyler Barron and Bryson Easton have been working with the defensive line group. And I see what they're trying to do. They're going to try to bring that pressure off the defensive end spot if they can. If they have to, those two can drop back, you know, into the outside linebacker position, if they, you know, if it calls for. But they're trying to get pass rush off the edge because they're not getting much push up the middle. I mean, even Karat Garland. And this is not a knock. I just think these guys haven't been coached in a year and a half. I mean, look what happened last year. They lost their coach, but 3 games into the season, and Jeremy Pruitt said he was going to coach defensive line, but it turned out that he was letting special assistant Todd Watson coach defensive line, which is just worthless and useless. So when you look at what this group has having to go through, Rodney Garner's trying to get the most out of them, but there's just a problem, man. They don't have that guy right now. And maybe when fall camp comes around, maybe these guys get a summer, you know, workouts and they're ready to go. But I tell you, it's going to be a struggle because Tennessee's offensive line was beating them up on Saturday. And it was kind of embarrassing. And they did the same thing on Thursday in the scrimmage where, you know, the defense started off pretty well. That's just because the offense was trying to get to a flow. And then once that happened, the offense was just gassing the defensive line. And then, brother, you take a look at linebacker. I mean, do you have any eligibility left for college? I mean, they're struggling right now.
It's tough.
I mean, you know, Jeremy Banks sitting out there, he's hurt. Roman Harrison, he's hurt. When I say hurt, they're coming off surgery. They're dealing with some injuries. They're getting healthier, which is going to be great, okay? But you had Morvin Joseph. You had Solomon Page out there. You had Pat Garland out there. You know, I talked with somebody after the scrimmage on Friday. You know, it was Thursday night. I talked to somebody on Friday. And I said, so what do y'all need? And we need more. And the quote was, we need more than walk-ons at the linebacker position.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the problem Tennessee runs into. Like, I think they're going to be okay. Like, outside linebacker spot, that's fine. Tyler Barron, they can figure that out. Whenever Martavius French comes back, maybe he can get in that role. You know, does Aaron Willis, when he comes back off suspension, does he help in that role? Yeah, probably. But right now, when you look at it, linebacker is in a very, very, very bad spot for Tennessee. And they've got to figure out who's going to step up, you know, over the next 7 practices, but also all during the summer leading into fall camp. Because right now, what they're putting on the field, they're going to get tore up the middle. And I don't think that's a secret to anybody.
Trey Wallace of Rocky Top Insiders here with us on 104.5 The Zone.
Trey, with that said, and with the status right now of Henry Toto and Kravaris Crouch, do you think that is a higher priority for this staff right now? Or are they in the mindset of finding somebody in the transfer portal, whatever happens with those two? Do you think they are allocating time and resources to trying to ensure those guys are on this team in the fall, given how thin that position group is? Or, I mean, what do you know right now about that situation?
Well, speaking with some folks, you know, I think the transfer market, the portal, it's going to be something that they take a hard look at, and they've got some spots available. Once spring practice ends, because it's going to be weird. It's going to be like college basketball. Once spring practice ends around the country, you're going to see players just flood the market. Let's see how Tennessee reacts to that. With the Henry Toto and Crouch thing, you know, I'm never going to come out of here and rag on a 20, 21-year-old, 18, whatever, a kid. But if you haven't been here all spring, if you haven't been with your teammates, you're not in the trenches, if you're out putting out, you know, Henry Toto, God love you. The kids out here putting out workout videos on Instagram and, you know, doing edits and photography and out here working out in the gym and working out on a field. Like, man, if you were going to be a part of the Tennessee football program, you would be in Knoxville.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way else to putting around it. Like, that's the bare fact. Crouch, he came back for, it was like a week and a half, I think it was, and then he did that again. And in my opinion, if you're the Tennessee coaching staff, okay, we're done. Like, that's fine. Like, you know, Crouch and Toa, you know, if they want to do this, then we're going to focus on this part. I think Tennessee can go out and find themselves a transfer. And again, that's not a knock on Tua Tua Crouch and their personality and how they are as young men and how they handle themselves, because I thought Henry Tua Tua is a great young man. But when you're out here doing this, and this, and you're making mixtapes on Instagram and showing your highlights, and you're working out, wherever he is out in California right now, and you're not a part of the team at Tennessee, you can't tell me his teammates don't see that, and you're like, wait a minute. You came back for a couple of days. You spoke with the coaches. You didn't like what you heard from the coaches, so you went back out to California. Because he was in town 2.5 weeks ago. He sat down and talked with the coaches. He didn't like what he heard, so he went back to California. So it's like, okay, where does the line get drawn? So if I'm Tim Banks, defensive coordinator, or Brian G. Mary, linebacker coach, I'm moving on from that. They're not a part of the program right now. And out of sight, out of mind. And you got to focus on what you have. Maybe they get Aaron Beasley back. That's the crazy part about this. Aaron Beasley, speaking with folks, was having a great spring. And then all of a sudden, this stuff comes up with animal abuse and whatnot and the allegations that are out there. Though, I do think that there's a resolution to that this week. I think there's a resolution to the Aaron Beasley stuff this week. I know he went in front of the student conduct board on Friday. His attorneys have put together a case, kind of putting it out there that that's not exactly what happened. Maybe he gets to return to Tennessee. I don't know. We'll have to see what the facts bring out. But right now, Tennessee needs to focus on what they have. And I promise you, the recruiting assistants over there are looking at the tape, looking at what people are putting on Twitter, and they'll get somebody out of the portal once spring ends.
We will be focused on all things Tennessee Volunteers at Rocky Top Insider, courtesy of our buddy Trey Wallace. You can follow him at @TreyWallace_. My brother, thank you so much for the insight, for the analysis. We appreciate the time as always. Have a fantastic Monday, Trey.
Thank you, my buddy. I appreciate you, and have fun with the Eddie George talk.
Yeah, we're gonna keep the train rolling around here.
My man.
104.5 The Zone. Trey Wallace, always a good time here with us on the show. All right. When we come back, it is going to be a Panzeca Preds update. It is going to be time to empty the notebook, and we will get back to the Eddie George conversation. All that and more coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. Some small child whispering moist into my ear. Woo! Happy Monday here on 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising with you until 1 o'clock. I'm a little rattled. I don't know how I'm going to get through the notebook segment, given what has just been thrust into my ear, ear hole?
I believe that's the proper term.
That sounds even worse. Anyway, 615-737-1045 is how you jump into the conversation. Now, it is our Monday tradition to empty the notebook, my notebook. I'm a prodigious note taker. I take too many notes on too many things that don't matter, but I got 5.5 hours of solo talking to do a day, so I make sure that everything in my life can be turned into content some way, some shape, somehow. So we will do that momentarily, but first, a Panzeca Preds update. As promised, Lucas was in attendance last night at Bridgestone Arena, a shootout victory for your Nashville Predators. Lucas, what can you tell us?
That is a fifth shootout victory this season. 5-0 whenever a game goes to shootout, it's to the point where no matter who's in goal, though UC Saros has won the majority of them, you have the utmost confidence that a shootout highly favors the Preds. And it's just rising to the occasion. Anytime the Preds and Stars go head-to-head, you know it's going to be a grinded-out, hard-hitting game for three periods. They stepped up to it, and you feel like it's a different guy rising to the occasion in every game. Thursday was Victor Arvidsson coming back from injury with a hat-trick. Yesterday it was Yakov Trenin playing possibly his best game as a Predator. He's having his best season of his NHL career. A goal, some crunching hits in the neutral zone, and Ryan Johansson doing his thing. Didn't come to the full stop. What was it I saw on Twitter? The controller dying mode.
Yeah, he does this. It's like a video game glitch. What he does, the slow Joe, I think Willie Donick called it last night on the broadcast. He did not utilize the slow Joe last night, but it was still effective nonetheless. Ryan Johansson in a shootout, cash money.
Yeah, and it's been, I mean, that's 12 in the last 15 at this point. Trade deadline coming up at 2 p.m. We'll have John Glennon on here in about half an hour to dive into that. I said last week I don't anticipate much movement, and we haven't seen any movement to this point. I saw something that Glennon retweeted from Sportsnet that David Poile has averaged one move per trade deadline throughout his career as an NHL GM.
Okay.
So that, I mean, that is an interesting tidbit that could have helped our discussions about this earlier in the season. But I don't anticipate much of anything today. You got to harness this right now. There's something happening in that locker room. This is just who they are at this point.
Head on a swivel, though. If there are moves to be made, David Poile, perhaps he would like to follow this trend, or perhaps he's thinking the same way that Lucas is, which you don't mess with the chemistry, with the flow that you have going on with the Nashville Predators. Now, what will have great flow, and we will have to remove some of this flow because I had something about the Nashville Predators in my notebook, but we have largely covered it in our, it seems daily, Panzeca Preds update as they continue to win 12 of their last 15 games overall. But now it is time to open my notebook. There is the notebook. Give me a little vibes. I'm vibing like Ryan Johansson here on a Monday. We'll get things going, and we start with the Masters. Elsewhere in winning on Sunday, Hideki Matsuyama, he made history as the first male Japanese golfer to win a major championship. You'll love to see it. Now, I know we want to root for our compatriots, our brothers in arms in the United States of America, but I like seeing international players win from time to time. Really, you know, makes it feel a little more universal. The playing field, or the course at this point, the track, as golfers would call it, very, very even, especially at Augusta on Sunday. He's 29 years old. He immediately made me feel worse about what I'm doing with my life at 27, especially considering the fact that I saw a report from ESPN's Andy North this morning that this weekend, this 4 days of golf that Matsuyama has just completed and ended up victorious with the green jacket, he's going to end up being a billionaire because of it. Billion with a B at this point, like LeBron James, like Tiger Woods. And you would say, well, how the hell is that going to happen? Well, international endorsements is how it's going to happen. If Hideki Matsuyama comes out for the Tokyo Olympics this summer in a green jacket, this man is going to be out here printing money. It's about to come pouring in for Hideki Matsuyama. So I took a trip to my hometown of Evansville, Indiana this weekend because I don't go see my family near enough. But more importantly, though, Lucas, it was the first time that I left my two kittens home alone for a weekend, and I have now determined that they may never need me again. Now, you turned me on to this to get an automatic pet feeder, so I went and got one. Dara, my girlfriend, did a fantastic job. She scheduled out their meals, worked like a charm. Nobody missed a meal while mom and dad were gone over the weekend. But I come home yesterday, and I expect, you know, at least a little emotion, at least a little something from these two creatures who I have safeguarded since taking them in from my actual trash cans, all right, 4 months ago. These trash pandas that I have made welcome, that I have allowed to live lavishly in my home. And because of this automatic feeder, because they have determined that they don't need me for food anymore, I walked in the door, I set my bag down, I basically like held my arms wide open, say, "Hey guys, good to see you." And they looked at me like, "What the hell are you doing in my house? What are you back? Why are you here? We were very comfortable without you. We need you no longer," except those idiots don't know that they need me to refill their automatic feeder. So joke's on them. Side note, I went to a restaurant yesterday morning. I had breakfast. We got home pretty early, about 7:30. And I came home from the road trip. Dara and I, we were looking to have a relaxing breakfast, looking to have some coffee, get our Sunday started. Favorite breakfast spot in Germantown. No free shout outs unless you want to, you know, throw us a bone here on 104.5 The Zone. You're welcome to do so. But the thing that made me infuriated, like blood boiling, is the fact that people have their dogs all in this restaurant in Germantown. And I understand, like, you're out for a Sunday morning walk, you're taking the dog with you, you're getting some exercise, it's a beautiful day, you want to stop for coffee on your walk. That's fine. Keep the dog outside, come in and get your coffee, don't bring the animal into my place of solitude. And I understand this is not a restaurant that I own. I understand that I have no control over the pet policies at my favorite breakfast spot in Germantown. But it's unsanitary. It's annoying. I've got dogs barking at other dogs, children screaming, playing with other people's dogs. Everybody's playing. Oh, look how cute it is. No, get it the hell out of my breakfast spot. All right? I want to have my breakfast crepe and my cup of coffee on Sunday morning without having to worry about your dog's hair in it, all right? Get them the hell out of restaurants.
Your beef is with the establishment here, not the dog owners.
Which is a shame because I love the establishment, but it's honestly, it's bad enough, and I get stressed. Like, I get stressed out by people's dogs. I can't, it's not, and it would be the same thing with cats. Like, what is this cat doing in a restaurant? I don't care what it is. It could be a pet iguana. Get it the hell out of the restaurant. Anyway, after my breakfast, beautiful day outside, so I decided to go walk to my gym. It's about 2 miles from where I live from downtown. About a 2 mile walk, I got my AirPods in, so I'm largely ignorant to my surroundings. And on the way home from the gym, I'm on the phone with Rhett Bryan, local Titans radio executive producer extraordinaire. And we're, you know, I'm asking him for some advice about who to reach out to speak about this Eddie George situation. By the way, Howard Gentry Jr. coming up next on that effect. But I was, I called it catcalling, but I was flagged down by a voice taking a, what do you call these things? A party barge around downtown Nashville. It's a Sunday. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He's with his family. He's probably heavily intoxicated, although I do not know that for a fact. So I will not put that on Zachary, who has tweeted us. ZachAttack77723 says, I see you, Buck, getting your steps in on Sunday. Fanboyed you like crazy, because he shouted me out, him and his family. And I was disoriented. I was looking around. I was like, who the hell is talking to me? Surely these people don't recognize the voice in their head from the radio. And, you know, it's a little bit of an ego thing. That's a nice thing to have happen. But it caught me off guard, because what I learned is that our audience, our fans here, Lucas, largely look like you and me. Not exactly the most flattering.
But that's not a cat call. A cat call is objectifying you about your appearance on your walk.
Well, maybe my thighs look good because my shorts were super short. And that's how we empty the notebook here on a Monday on 104.5 The Zone. But coming up next, we talk to Howard Gentry Jr., one of the most notable alumni, a staple of the Nashville community, courtesy of Tennessee State University. He is going to provide us some insight and information to a degree on what is going on with Eddie George and his alma mater, TSU. All that and more coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone.